Hello, and welcome everyone to today's press conference for the launch of the Kentucky Energy Transition Report, which is a report commissioned by Kentucky Resources Council and their partner organizations, Metropolitan Housing Coalition, Mountain Association, and Earth Justice. My name is Laura, and I'll be the one moderating today. You're going to hear from three experts here, and then we will start the Q&A. And I also just want to note that today's briefing is being recorded, and that recording will be made available afterwards. So, our speakers today are Ashley Wilms, who is the Executive Director of Kentucky Resources Council. Ashley is an environmental attorney with experience advancing public interest and conservation work across the country. She's held multiple leadership roles in Kentucky's environmental community, including chairing the Kentucky Bar Association's environmental law section and serving on the Kentucky Environmental Education Council. You're also going to hear from Tony Curtis, who is the Executive Director of the Metropolitan Housing Coalition. And prior to joining the MHC, Tony worked for 11 years at the Kentucky Historical Society in Frankfort, where he worked as a seasoned researcher and technical administrator. And finally, you're going to hear from Robin Gabbard, who is the president of Mountain Association and has spent her entire career serving Appalachia. Prior to Mountain Association, Robin worked at a number of nonprofits serving Kentucky and the Appalachia community. I also want to note that Byron Gary, program attorney at Kentucky Resources Council, and Cassandra McCray, senior attorney at Earth Justice's Clean Energy Program, are also going to be available for questions during the Q&A. And we do have a number of other coalition members here who might get tagged in if they are the ones to best answer based on their area of expertise. So each speaker is going to give some brief remarks and then we'll open it up to questions. So, Ashley, I'm going to kick it over to you.
Great. Well, thank you, Laura, and thanks everybody for being here today. We're really excited to launch this new report. So, for decades here in Kentucky, coal was the least cost way to produce electricity. But as our coal plants age and as the cost of renewable energy continues to fall, that's simply no longer the case. Concerned about coal's declining role and citing concerns about reliability, Kentucky lawmakers enacted two new laws, Kentucky Senate Bill 4 in 2023 and Kentucky Senate Bill 349 in 2024. These new laws make it harder to retire coal-fired power plants, and they prevent the use of most renewables for replacement capacity. Embedded in those laws is the assumption that moving forward with cleaner energy is more expensive and less dependable. As attorneys and policy experts working in this space every day, we sensed that these assumptions were flawed, but we wanted to put them to the test. So, alongside our partners who regularly appear before the Kentucky Public Service Commission, we commissioned an independent and unbiased study of Kentucky's electricity needs. We wanted a report that really looked at the past and outcomes that were restrict that you know as restricted by these laws, and whether there's a more reliable and cheaper path forward. So today we are excited to release the report, Kentucky's Energy Transition: Setting the Right Path, by Current Energy Group. After conducting detailed power system and economic modeling through 2050, the researchers found that continued reliance on Kentucky's aging fleet of coal-fired power plants is just no longer the least cost option for Kentucky's electricity users. The most affordable option for Kentuckians includes much more renewable energy and battery storage and stronger energy efficiency strategies. And this is shown in the report. This portfolio outperforms the resource plans that are currently being pursued by Kentucky's regulated electric utilities. The least cost option for Kentucky's electricity future is one that transitions away from coal and avoids new gas-fired units. This maintains reliability and could save electricity ratepayers $2.6 billion through 2050. If you look at potential carbon-related compliance costs and fuel risks in the future, these savings grow much larger. The report really underscores that SV4 and SV349 hinder the development of cheaper and cleaner energy alternatives, making it harder for utilities to pursue the most affordable and resilient resources that we can for this state. Continuing to rely on aging, uneconomic power plants simply leads us to less stable, less dependable, and higher cost electricity when compared to the other pathways that are modeled in our report. So, what does this mean for all of us? Well, when people are choosing between their grocery bills and keeping the lights on, and when employers face rising electricity bills, our economy suffers. Kentucky's economic future is directly tied to whether families and businesses can afford their electricity bills. As one of the poorest states in the nation and home to so many industries that really rely on low-cost electricity, having affordable and reliable electricity is so important. And the report is really clear. Continuing to rely on these aging, costly coal plants and then adding new gas on top of them is the most expensive and the most risky path we can take. It drives up our rates and it undermines the very economic development that we are all working to attract. Kentucky deserves an energy strategy that supports household budgets and job growth. And to do that, we have to hold on to the goal that Kentucky has long had that chooses the least cost, reasonable approaches to meeting our electricity needs. We just can't afford to subsidize a particular fuel choice by changing the whole rules for utility planning. But the good news from this report is that Kentucky does have better options. By replacing aging coal plants with a more diverse mix of renewable energy, avoiding the build-out of gas plants we don't need, we can save billions through 2050. SB4 and SB349 were enacted to protect reliability, but these laws really just hold us back. They hold us and our economy back, and Kentucky deserves a path forward that lowers bills, strengthens reliability and resiliency, and creates new job opportunities from investing in renewable energy. A cleaner, more diverse energy policy is not just sound policy. It's how we build a stronger future across the Commonwealth. So with that, I will pass it on to Tony with Metropolitan Housing Coalition.
Thank you, Ashley, for the opportunity to speak and for the continued partnership over the years. Rising utility costs threaten housing affordability, and the report findings make clear that it is time for legislative and regulatory leaders to assess the path forward. Kentucky's future is not in doubling down on outdated coal-fired power or turning to new gas generation, but in a least-cost portfolio of renewables, storage, and demand-side resources. There are real housing, economic, environmental, and health consequences for low and fixed-income households because of the policy path enacted by the Kentucky legislature with the passage of Senate Bill 4 in 2023 and Senate Bill 349 in 2024. Kentucky is currently experiencing an energy affordability crisis where one in three Kentuckians struggle to afford their monthly energy bill, with more than 57,000 households in Louisville facing high, that's above 6% energy burdens. While the city's average energy burden is 4.5%, low and moderate income households have an average burden of 8%, with the lowest income residents, those making less than 30% area median income, facing burdens of 16% or more. These burdens have only continued to increase. Low-income residents and communities of color are disproportionately affected, and these burdens fall hardest on housing-burdened communities already experiencing high poverty. I ask you to consider the following. A worker making Kentucky's minimum wage, $7.25 per hour, would have to work 19 and a half hours just to pay for one typical month's energy bill, almost 2.5 full work days. This financial burden fluctuates with seasonal weather and climate, but households may have to devote more of their working time to pay these bills during the hottest parts of the summer or the coldest parts of the winter, when the danger of a missed payment and utility disconnection is heightened. This report drives home the point that utility affordability equals housing affordability across the Commonwealth, and it is clear that Senate Bill 4 and Senate Bill 349 do not create safer, more stable, affordable, or resilient households across the Commonwealth. I would like to take a moment and introduce Robin Gabbard, President of the Mountain Association.
Thank you so much. We too are honored to be part of the report and also the this gathering today. Here's what we're seeing at and experiencing at the Mountain Association. Our business owners are struggling daily with increasing costs of electricity. The rate increases that we've already experienced, Eastern Kentucky families are faced with rates that are 50% higher than they experienced just 10 years ago. And small commercial customers' rates are going up by 35% or more. That's money that most Eastern Kentuckians simply do not have. People are facing some hard choices. Do they keep their small businesses going or do they shut down because they can't afford to operate? Additionally, since the 2023 flooding, our communities have experienced outmigration. Higher energy costs could further accelerate the exodus as residents and businesses relocate to areas with more affordable energy. Eastern Kentucky can't take that type of economic hit. These challenges make one thing clear: we need stronger energy resilience. Enterprises that we work with have decided to invest in their own facilities to reduce energy costs. For example, groceries have chosen solar to offset their rising energy costs. Community centers that provide some storm service, storm response services, and food distribution to their own communities are investing in battery storages to keep the lights on and their food cold. Resiliency advantages to clean energy investments are becoming clearer to people by the day. Each year, the Kentucky LIHEAP program helps tens of thousands of low-income households with heating and cooling costs. Last year, nearly 150,000 customers were disproportionately affected because they carry a higher energy burden and are more vulnerable to disruptions. Grid resilience measures like improved infrastructure, diversified energy sources, and advanced load management directly support these households by reducing outages, lowering long-term energy costs, and improving system reliability. As Ashley indicated earlier, Kentucky's economic future is directly tied to whether our families and our businesses, as well as our local governments, can afford their energy bills. Eastern Kentuckians need access to energy efficiency, battery storage, rooftop solar, and smart appliances to help address some of the highest energy burdens in the country. We can build a grid that's more reliable, more affordable for our families and business owners, and more attractive for employers who need stable prices and clean, dependable power. This report shows that our utilities could choose low-risk, no-regrets investments in our homes, businesses, churches, and local governments, and lower energy bills for every ratepayer at the same time. Ashley, I'll hand it back to you.
Thank you. This report, as we've all talked about, really demonstrates that Kentucky can chart a cleaner, reliable, and more just energy future. Propping up uneconomic power from an aging fleet of coal-fired power plants only raises the risk to and risks and costs for Kentucky families and businesses. What we really need is a diverse portfolio grounded in renewable energy, battery storage, and energy efficiency that can produce and maintain the reliable and least cost electricity going forward that has always been one of Kentucky's greatest economic advantages. Moving forward, we're all getting ready to head into the 2026 Kentucky General Assembly, where other decisions are going to be made about Kentucky's energy future. And so I think right now there's a real opportunity for us to share the findings of this report, to have conversations with our neighbors and our lawmakers about what is best for Kentuckians, for our pocketbooks, for our economy, for our environment. And so this is also, I think, important from a national perspective because we're seeing a lot of other states, including, I know Alaska, Arizona, Iowa, Nebraska, Utah, Wyoming, these other states that either have considered or have passed legislation that also slows the closure of aging coal-fired power plants. And so I think this report highlights not just for Kentucky, but for the nation, the risks and the costs associated with that approach. So hopefully we can really look at the facts and not just rely on assumptions and chart a better path for not only Kentuckians, but the nation. And with that, I will open it up to questions.
Yeah, thank you so much to our speakers. If you've got a question, please raise your hand here on Zoom, or you can throw it in the chat, and I'll call them out, in the order that I receive them. Liam, you're first on my screen.
Hi, everyone. Liam with Kentucky Lantern. Thanks for having this call. I just wanted to ask a question for those on the call here. I mean, feel free to jump in with whoever feels like it's best appropriate. Going through the report, there was a number of things that stuck out to me. One was talking about the definitions within, say, Senate Bill 4 and well, I believe Senate Bill 349 added on to it that the report stated that the definitions of what's intermittent and what's dispatchable makes it to where coal-fired power plant units can only be replaced with gas generation. I was wondering if someone on the call could expand on that a little bit in the sense of how do these Kentucky laws specifically restrict utilities with what they can replace coal-fired power with?
Sure, Liam. This is Byron with Kentucky Resources Council. So, as you stated, starting with Senate Bill 4 and then as expanded on in Senate Bill 349, the Kentucky legislature set up a rebuttable presumption, as they termed it, against the retirement of any fossil fuel unit, specifically stating that it had to be replaced with an equal amount, essentially, of dispatchable energy. And then in SB 349, in 2024, they specifically defined dispatchable to exclude intermittent resources, and then defined intermittent resources to include renewables, battery storage, and a number of other resources. So it explicitly says that those resources are intermittent and therefore not dispatchable, and therefore cannot be used to replace capacity from fossil fuel units.
And apologies, I don't have a first name, but A. Ramsey, you're up next on my screen.
Hey, Austin Ramsey, with the Herald Leader. Ashley, I have not had the chance to look at the report, so I apologize, but I was hoping that you could expand a little bit on the $2.6 billion in savings over the next 50 years that you talked about at the top. What exactly does that entail? Are we talking about just rolling back these two pieces of legislation that have been kind of the center point of this research, or are we talking about actually retiring any specific plants or generating new types of electricity?
I'm going to briefly address that, and then I'm going to let Byron provide a more technical response. But that $2.6 billion is comparing the IRP baseline portfolio, which looked at the current integrated resource plans of the utilities, and that's spelled out in the report, with a least cost portfolio that includes far more renewables, battery storage, and demand side management resources. Byron, do you want to add on that?
Sure. I'll just add that as to where the savings come from specifically, what the study found was that the biggest chunk of savings was in the variable costs that are associated with fossil fuel plants. So by replacing fossil fuel plants or even building renewables on top of existing fossil fuel plants, we would save on fuel costs, operation and maintenance costs, and other associated costs with just keeping these plants running day to day. So that's the biggest category of savings that came from expanding our portfolio of energy resources.
Thank you.
Russ.
Yes, thank you. So obviously our newspapers are in Eastern Kentucky, and any move away from coal or coal mining or production is going to have a heavy impact on jobs here. Has any part of this report kind of considered that, or how that impact could be lessened or anything about it?
Wants to take that one. No, it does not talk about jobs, but I think if you really look at the data on the where the coal is coming from that Kentucky coal plants are burning, most of it is not Eastern Kentucky. So we don't feel like choosing a different model, a least cost model, is going to impact jobs. In fact, we think there's a lot of economic opportunity that's demonstrated in this report, that can come from moving to a more renewable energy future and building on those clean energy jobs, which I think is a good path forward.
And I will just add that our communities have been deeply involved and working toward a diversified economic, more sustainable system for years. And we are seeing, showing, and seeing the results of a very intense effort by not only community development organizations, but local governments and other nonprofits, that when you create small economic systems, you're generating both not on, both economic mobility as well as future endeavors. It's a more sustainable economy all across the board. So while we've seen jobs leave, this is not new. Adjusting and diversifying our energy at this time is not something that's going to disrupt the economic system, because we've seen with those boom and bust systems of the coal industry over the course of the years, we dealt with out-migration, we dealt with economic renewal, we dealt with all forms of economic viability. And so thinking about what a sustainable economy looks like going forward, this report just solidifies that a diversified energy system is going to hold up an economy, not take away from.
And I'll just add a couple of numbers to further bolster what Robin and Ashley just stated. We're currently looking at the third rate increase from Kentucky Power Company in East Kentucky in the past 5 years, as they continue to try to extend the life of a coal plant that they buy power from or that they co-own in West Virginia. And we've seen comments from local businesses and residents that they are being pushed out of the area due to the rising costs from energy in Eastern Kentucky, and even local governments that are struggling to keep up. There was a comment posted just earlier this week to that docket. That Greenup County schools will be facing an additional $48,000 a year cost if rate increases keep up as they are.
One of the county governments that we are working with has indicated that they're going to see a rate increase of over $35,000 per year.
I'd love to jump in here as a former displaced worker. In 2008, the economy was hit by the housing market crash, and I lost my home and business, and all of my, as a home builder, all of my contractors also went out of business. But Kentucky made an investment in me through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, I was able to get a good job and leverage my skill set and do energy efficiency work for ratepayers across Eastern Kentucky. And Kentucky's coal industry workforce is facing similar issues, losses of jobs due to no fault of their own, to choices they did not make, and they have skill sets that are easily transferable into this new work, which can help put lower Kentuckians' bills, help put more Kentuckians to work, and make tremendous impacts across our communities. So, as someone who has benefited from an investment through a transition, I want to put a face on that. Thanks.
Thank you. And we have a question in the chat on where to find a copy of the report. I just want to say to everyone here, if you're on the distribution list, I'll be following up with a version of that with a link to it. But Ashley, I also, Ashley or Byron wanted to allow you to mention where this will be available in the future.
Finally, I do want to point out that one of the models that the report shows is continuing to, it models what happens if you continue to impose the restrictions in place by SB 4 and SB 349, but then you allow the model to choose the lower, the least cost options. And what we found comparing those models is that what the utilities are doing and what they're doing, the IRP baseline in our report, it does have SB 4 and SB 349 baked in. And you know, but so you when you compare the IRP baseline portfolio, which includes SB 4 and SB 349, to a what we are calling an optimized SB restricted portfolio. What happened in that SB optimized portfolio is that when you allow the model to choose the least cost resources, it turns out that those least cost resources are much more renewables, battery storage, and energy efficiency than the utilities currently have planned. So what I think it shows clearly is that there is a least cost option, even under SB 4 and SB 349, than what the utilities currently are doing, which is building out way more gas plants, and then asking Kentuckians to pay for those.
I also have a question from direct message. How should the report's findings be interpreted by policymakers in other states, considering similar restrictions and requirements as outlined in Senate Bill 4 and 349?
I could offer something on that. Cassandra McRae with Earth Justice. I think it would be important to remember that a guide star for all good law and policy is to be fuel neutral and be responsive to the facts and the technologies and the economics like of the time. And for the most part, that's what Kentucky law was trying to do before passage of these fuel preference bills. And I would discourage going down that path. Certainly, it will lead to higher costs because you're just deciding at the outset that you want the outcome to favor a certain fuel without allowing the facts to point you in the direction of what's really least cost, what's really least risk, what's really the most reliable set of resources we could move forward with.
Thank you. Are there any final questions or statements from our speakers? If not, we can wrap up.
Laura, I just wanted to let everybody know that the link in the chat is to the landing page. The report will be available there very soon, so you can download a copy. And as I understand it, a copy of this press conference will be available in an hour or so that you'll be able to access through YouTube.
Yes, correct. Or at the very least, I'll have a link to it in the press release, and then you guys will do with that what you will.
Thank you.
All right. Well, then we will wrap it up. Oh, one more. How will legislators hear about this?
We do intend to send a copy of this to all Kentucky's lawmakers. We're hoping it really sparks a good conversation about the most sound, policy and energy choices for Kentucky moving forward.
Okay, great. All right. Well, thank you for joining today, everyone. You'll receive all of the distributed materials after, and have a lovely day.